This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is BFM 89.9, 7:06 in the morning, 11th of May 2021. I'm Khoo Soo Chong, joined by Philip C. Now, in about 15 minutes, we'll talk about Pakatan Harapan's newly formed committees with Dr. Wong Chin Huat, the Sunway University political scientist. But before that, markets.
Yes, I think in the US, very volatile day. The Dow closed down 0.1% after briefly touching 35,000 for the first time. The S&P was down 1%, but the NASDAQ plunged 2.6%, I think, over inflation worries. But back over in Asia, Nikkei was up 0.6%, Shanghai also in positive territory at 0.3%, but Hong Kong was closed marginally down 0.05%, Singapore also down 0.6%, and back home in Malaysia, KLCA down 0.2%.
So, Chair, to break down the markets and to explain developments, we've got on the line with us Joe Quinlan, the Chief Market Strategist for the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Joe, well, thanks for talking to us. Now, recent declines in the US dollar have been attributed to the fading US economic growth. Do you agree with this, or have there been other reasons for the reversal in the greenback?
Well, I think, Bart, you know, when you look at, say, the pound, you look at the euro, some of these currencies are strengthening because their outlook is improving. And here in the United States, yeah, there's rising concern about the twin deficits, the federal budget deficit, and also the current account deficit. I mean, last week, I think we reported a $75 billion monthly merchandise trade deficit. So, yeah, I think the dollar, we expected to weaken here, but gently, nothing dramatically. And that's good for earnings for big U.S. multinationals. So there's a positive spin to this story.
Well, talking about stories, overnight U.S. markets had a bit of a red letter day, and the NASDAQ was down nearly 3%. Apple was one of the biggest casualties. Inflation worries are cited as the concern here, Joe. What is your view on that?
You know, I'm in the camp that it's transitory, but it's going to be transitory, but it's going to take a while to work out, i.e. 6, 8, 9, 12 months, right? We're just at the beginning of the inflationary inputs that comes out at the other end with the output. So, but I do think, you know, if you believe in trade, productivity, automation, you know, immigration, you're going to see the labor force participation rate pick up. All these will help kind of build against that big spike in inflation. So I think it's a worry for this year. It's going to be a cross current. It's going to create the volatility. It's going to create days like today. You're up and you're down. But we think at the end of the day, inflation moderates as we go deeper into 22. But that's a long ways from today.
Well, one aspect that's not dropping is commodities, because commodity futures like iron ore and copper have been hitting record highs. Do you have a near-term outlook for those metals?
Yeah, we're bullish on metals. We're bullish on energy. And when you kind of look at the synchronized global expansion, so, you know, growth coming back, particularly in Europe, and then the renewables, right? Everyone's talking about renewables, solar, you know, wind, electrical vehicles. They're very metal intensive. People are just waking up to the fact that you can need a lot of copper, iron ore, lithium, you know, you name any metal, we're going to need it to make this transition. And then you've got the inflationary worries building in the market. So it's almost like the perfect storm. Overlay the infrastructure spending that's still coming from the Biden administration. More cement, more demand for water, more demand for sand. So I think we're early in the commodity cycle. I wouldn't call it a super cycle, but we see more upside.
Yeah, so this whole spectre of rising prices is a concern. I mean, even Warren Buffett talked about that at his AGM a few days ago. What does this mean for the U.S. economy, though, Joe, more broadly speaking? Because you talked about how inflation is a concern going deep into 22, right? What's at stake here?
Yeah, it's, you know, the biggest issue is profit margins, because companies are paying more for inputs. They're going to pay more for labor, signing bonuses. You know, there's pricing wars for labor at the retail, restaurants, you know, at the higher end as well. But so if you're a company, you can't pass on these costs, or you can't cover these costs with greater productivity, you're going to have a harder time. And this is where I think the small caps might lose some steam relative to the large caps. Large cap companies, they can automate, boost their productivity, you know, they can scale up, so to speak. So what it means in particular is, you know, we're going to see rising wages put some more money in the incomes and more money in the pockets of Americans. But if they're going to pay more for gas, food, then they kind of lose out. I'm watching very carefully. I mean, if you get corporate tax rates rising next year and this profit margin squeeze vis-a-vis higher wages and other input costs, that can really dampen their earnings outlook for 22 and create a stiff headwind to this market that seems to go nowhere but up.
So for investors, right, who are the biggest winners, who are the biggest losers, and are there safe havens?
In terms of inflation, I mean, you've seen technology pull back here, this question about valuations. The big winners would be getting, the cyclical side of the equation. So we got a lot. Consumer discretionary could be a loser here. Staples could be a winner. So there's cross currents here at play. But I think I think any pullback in technology is a buying opportunity. Maybe we're not there yet, but if you're listening and you don't own technology, big cap American technology, buy it on the pullback because they're increasing their R&D. Social media content is exploding. Everything's going digital. There's a lot more room upside. So take this opportunity to get that exposure if you don't have it.
Right. Thanks. And I just want to Bill, to a point you said earlier on, pricing war for labor. Now, American April non-farm payrolls failed to meet expectations, so there seems to be a disconnect there. Why is that the case?
Yeah, that's a good question because, a lot of economists, they can't agree on anything, and they can't agree on this one, because the government's spending too much money to keep people at home, if they're related to COVID risk. Single-family moms are having a hard time coming back for sure. Female participation rate's low. It's a combination of factors. So we've got a real mismatch in the economy. We have a 500,000 manufacturing job openings right now in this country. We need the immigrants. We need females to come back in the labor force, single moms to be brought back and not worry about their kids at home, pre-K and so forth. So there's a lot of work yet to be done here in the United States, but I haven't seen this much pressure on labor and the scramble for labor, whether it's high-end, low-end, skilled, unskilled. I haven't seen this in decades. So there's a real pressure. And, but here's kind of the good news when it comes to inflation. It will slow down the economy. Our economy might slow down. The growth will taper because of the lack of workers, the lack of capacity, and the lack of kind of supply. That in itself could be more deflationary because it takes away from growth. So there's a silver lining there, but that's not how you want to tackle inflation, not by slower growth.
So Joe, how does the jobs deficit gap play itself out? Because this is the whole idea in America that folks are making more being unemployed from stimulus checks than they are from their real jobs.
Yeah, and there's some truth to that. It's a lot of studies. If you make, given where we're at right now, a $15 an hour job with unemployment benefits plus the $300 overlay, it's just not worth going to work. It's about paid about $15 an hour. They roll off. Some of these benefits roll off in September. Maybe we get past the summer, people get back to work, wages, bonuses, signing bonuses pick up, kick in, and people slowly but surely get back to work. So we think, if you really feel it, the 3-month moving average for employment growth here in the United States is 500,000 plus. That's a pretty robust number, relatively speaking. And I know there's some, you got to average it out. So, it's going to take time to get people off the sidelines, get them in the labor market. I think that will happen slowly but surely. Remember, before the pandemic, the unemployment rate was about 3.9%, and it was reaching well into the unskilled pool, people without high school education, and I think we'll ultimately get there. It's just going to take some time.
All right, Joe, thanks so much for your time. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist for the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Murky outlook for the Americas, though, isn't it?
So the employment number is very interesting because the non-farm payroll numbers that were coming through were all, interestingly, mostly for men. So the question really has been whether or not it's driven by the fact that the stimulus checks are stopping people from getting to work, or whether actually women are not trying to enter the workforce because they are worried still about the pandemic. There's a whole combination.
I don't think it's a gender discussion. I think it's a job type discussion. Like manufacturing has typically been filled by male. So So that's the kind of like putting the tail on the wrong donkey, right?
Could be as well, because the issue in America is that a lot of the jobs are services sector driven.
That's right. So what I was going to say is the murky outlook, right? Because America's, and I think Joe is right in pointing out that as prices rise, inflation becomes a concern and stays a concern deep into 2022. Mm-hmm. And that's going to hurt profit margins. And of course, last time we saw Apple, not plunge, but it dropped to $126 from $130. So for a $2.5 trillion company, that's a big drop.
It is.
And the cyclicals, like you, for example, you saw Berkshire. Berkshire's $195, right? But in fact, bit of trivia, right? Berkshire class A Class B Berkshire shares, yep. right? Class A Berkshire shares are now trading at $420,000 per share, mind you, per share, right? And this is the idea that the NYSE can't allow for trades of stocks that are priced at $427,000 and above because the algos don't, they can't treat it, right? So and Warren Buffett doesn't want to split Berkshire Class A. He's always been adamantly that it's going to stay where it is. It's a bit of a conundrum for the algo trade. For the software guys, but
interestingly, I think his advice was quite clear. Still invest in stock and remain invested. It's a buying opportunity there.
Okay, 7:16. We'll come back after this with some more news and of course a discussion from about Pakatan Harapan's newly formed committee. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.